The exhibition that's on in Hamilton at the moment, it's a bit of a sort of return to home base for you, I guess, in a way, isn't it, being very much where you were from?
Yeah, sort of. I was actually born in Casterton, but moved to... we were on a farm for the first 6 years of my life. We moved to Hamilton when I was six, I think, yes.
It's a little bit... it's always interesting, I find, putting articles of clothing into museums, because it just gives them a completely... It just makes you look at them in a completely different way, doesn't it? Or I don't know, do you look at all of your creations in that way as being... works of art, I guess.
Well, when I was installing the exhibition, being put into a glass case with a spotlight on them, it does make them look different, but really hats are made to be worn, so it's always nice to see a hat on a head.
Yes.
But in a museum, you know, it does add an extra shiny sort of air of glamour to them, I suppose.
Does it make them, give them, I'm trying to think of the right way to describe it, but it really does sort of turn them into sculptures, doesn't it?
I guess so. My work is kind of sculptural in a way, I suppose. That's a way to describe it, yes. Mm. It's not conventional millinery as such.
So what does this exhibition actually represent for you then? What sort of period of your work does it cover?
Well, it covers, probably covers about 10 years, I think, thinking back. Yeah, a bit more than 10 years of work.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that is from my earlier period, I've sort of chosen the ones that I like the most, because milliners also cannibalise as well. They take apart hats and reuse bits and pieces. We're the world's greatest recyclers, probably.
All right. How does it typically work, though? Do you make hats for one-off kind of specific uses, and then once that's gone, the hat comes back to you and you do what you like?
Well, I have a lot of clients who come to me and they keep their hats, of course. I wanted to use hats from my personal collection that I have here at my studio. I didn't want to actually ask for people's hats back. I thought, no, I'll use ones that I actually have, even though there's some amazing hats I've done for clients. But I actually wanted to show things that I've decided to keep intact for the exhibition, because they're the ones I was most pleased with.
Right. So the ones that are there, then, what have they been made for?
I do work for... for a fashion parade recently, they wanted some hats that looked like clouds and some umbrellas that looked like clouds as well. So I did some hats and umbrellas that looked like clouds, and they were used as part of the fashion festival in Melbourne.
Okay.
And after they're used, I get them back, and I chucked away most of the umbrellas. I kept one of them, and I kept the hats. So, you know, I do various things too, like for TV ads, I make hats for those if they need a particular type of hat, or... again, I work a lot with clients who are going to the races, or a lot of bridal clients who are either getting married, or mother of the bride, or mother of the groom.
I imagine for a lot of people who are looking at the exhibition, they might be quite... it was very hard to look at it, I guess, and just get a real sense of what's actually gone into creating the pieces that are there. I don't know if you can talk us through the process, so I imagine it's probably different every time, but or is it? I mean, is there a general starting point or something that always, I don't know, inspires you or gets you started?
Well, I can tell you the end point. The end point is to make a piece that's attractive in and of itself, and then the extra element is when it's put on a head and somebody wears it. Everything is made to be attractive in three dimensions. Like in all of the hats you're looking at in the exhibition, you're seeing the front of the hat. But one of the things I would have liked to have done, and I should have thought of it when I was installing the exhibition, is had mirrors behind some of them so you can see the back of them, because the back of them is just as important as the front, because the hat is a piece that, you know, as I say, it comes alive when it's on a head, and generally you'll see people from front and the side and the back as well. So I want to make a piece that is attractive, and most of the pieces aren't functional as shade givers or, you know, keeping out the rain. They're merely decorative, but still that doesn't make them any less interesting for not being functional as such. So I really want to make a shape that's pleasing to me and pleasing to the client, if there's a client involved. And if there's a client involved also, that works with their outfit and complements them and complements the personality and the outfit that they're wearing.
Yes, that was the other thing I was going to ask you then, was the sort of extra factors and how they might work into what you do. So, I mean, when you mentioned personality, for example, how do you assess someone's personality and then incorporate that?
Well, if somebody is a quieter type, you know, is a more, well, I hesitate to say a shrinking violet or shy and retiring, but yeah. If there's somebody who wants a smaller hat with less detail on it, then that's fine, I can do that. Or if they want a large hat with a fair bit of detail. But having said that, a lot of my hats are about one thing and a lot of it. I tend not to over-decorate my hats with, you know, there's a bow and then there's a feather and then there's a flower.
Right.
Most of the time there is one thing. And if it is more than one thing, it's generally that thing again and again.
Right.
So if I have a client who wants something that's a bit more overstated, then I can do that too within the bounds of what I consider taste and attractiveness, of course. Mm.
Can it also be a way to, I don't know, express something about somebody that they might not be able to express themselves?
Occasionally, you know, I might show somebody a hat that I think they wouldn't like, and they go, oh, yes, that's wonderful, I'd like something like that. So you can't second-guess people, really. You have to show them a range of things and then get the hat on their head, too. That's the other thing, and say, OK, here is the hat, here's a mirror, look at the way it looks from behind, and do you like the way the silhouette looks on your face shape? And occasionally someone will just, on the other hand, somebody will just put on a hat and say, I really want that one, please, and that's it.
Right. Would you ever make the same hat twice?
Everything is individual. There's always a difference because everything is handmade. Nothing's going to turn out exactly the same. And if somebody wanted me to, I would make the same hat twice in a different colour, I guess.
Now, the actual process of making them, though, then, is it just, I'm sure it's not a case of having the idea and then, you know, bang, there it is. What sort of stages does it go through, and how do you actually, you know, construct it?
Well, that's the main thing, is a lot of the things I do look like they're sort of floating in space, I guess, and that's where the engineering comes in and the trickiness in the construction. It takes a lot of sort of working out where a wire is going to sit or how am I going to make that look as if it's floating in space. Like, for instance, there's a piece in the exhibition which has a hand writing a letter.
Yes.
And they took a lot of working out, just from an engineering point of view, where the letter was going to sit on the headpiece, how was I going to make it look as if it's sort of flying in the air, and there's a hand that actually is holding a pen that is literally floating in space. So the wire that supports it goes up through the inside of the pen, and then the hand is printed on silk, and the hand is actually holding the pen, writing the letter. So that took a whole lot of working out. I mean, it started out as, you know, a very simple little sketch. But then you have to think of a three-dimensional thing. How can I hide this wire? Where is that going to end up? How does this attach to the headpiece? Is it going to be too heavy on one side of the head? All that sort of thing.
Mm.
So you have to think about the aesthetics of it as well as the engineering. It's a bit like architecture in a way. Will a certain thing be able to take the stress of the weight of that other certain thing that is part of the hat as well?
Yes.
Even though everything in a hat is extremely lightweight, you still have to consider how much wind it will catch or is it going to be something that somebody's going to dance in, for instance? When I've made hats for dancers, you know, I've got to think of, okay, well, are they putting the head down or to the side or what's going on?
Yes. Yeah, so I'm curious as well then as to how robust some of these things can be, given that they are very, I guess, very precisely engineered, as you say.
Some of them are actually more robust than you'd actually imagine. Some of them are... you know, they all hats bounce, or they should if they, you know, that's saying at the drop of a hat, because hats are easily dropped, I guess. But they're more robust than they look, I think, most of them. They've managed to survive being, you know, chucked about in my studio here, so it's kind of nice to see them in a nice museum cabinet all lit up nicely.
What sort of reception do you get then when you come back to Hamilton as well these days? Because, I mean, there is a little film which plays in the foyer, which I only caught a part of when I was looking at the exhibition, but it does, I think it talks a little bit about some of the difficulties that you had in your childhood.
There weren't difficulties as such as they're just what happened to kids who were creative and different, and, you know, I was a very insular child.
Mm.
You know, I didn't want to, well, I did a lot of running around, but it was generally by myself and occasionally with my, you know, brothers and sister, but I did a lot of sitting by myself and reading books and looking at nature. You know, that was what really interested me, and that really didn't fit in with the way that other kids were.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's life, and that actually has made me what I am today. That actually has carried through into my work, and I'm happy to say that I really love what I do. So I'm sure if I hope that everyone who was a kid when I was growing up loved what they do too, and I'm very lucky to be able to do what I do.
Yeah.
And I know that.
And I guess some of that nature that you mentioned as well is also very much informed a lot of how you design now and what you design.
Oh, most definitely, yes, most definitely. Even though I really love high tech. I love the idea of using injection molding, say, or forming things by computer, like computer-aided design and computer-aided manufacture. Even though I love all the various traditional skills that are involved in millinery and they're very, you know, very venerable skills and lovely to know. Sometimes if something new comes along that actually does the job better and gives a better finish, I will be the first to embrace it. It's not, well, I think that actually in the exhibition you see hats that look like almost like structural engineering, especially the string picture hats. There's one called Brooklyn Bridge, which is actually like a string picture from the 70s.
And, yes.
Yeah. So there's other things that almost resemble coral or something from the sea or things like that too. So even though I have very Catholic, in the true sense of the word, tastes, that I think there's something that runs through everything. I think it's attention to detail that really is one of the things that runs through all the pieces. I actually really want to do a demonstration as well of hat making at the gallery, and that'll be some stage during early May, I think. We haven't decided on a date yet, but I'll actually be showing people how I approach how I make things, which is just as important as a finished product as the actual way that you get there, I think.
Oh, what a fascinating idea as well, for, you know, for a gallery as well, I guess, to give away some of the secrets, perhaps, of what's on display.
Well, I don't know whether they're secrets. They're more things, because the way that I work is to explore stuff, because I'm extremely curious by nature. And I think, well, if that's done that way, why can't it be done this way? And the amount of times that I stuff up, I also make a new discovery.
Right.
Especially with the use of feathers, like, you know, particular ways of treating feathers with heat or bleach or dye or whatever the case happens to be. There's always a new way of doing things, and it might not be the best way of doing it, but it's a different way that adds something new to my pieces that makes them distinct from anybody else's. So I'm also a bit contrary by nature as well, so I like to think, well, nobody else is doing that, so I will do it. So, you know, there's a few pieces like that in the gallery as well, where I thought, well, stuff it, I want to make something that looks like a three-dimensional string picture, because I really liked them when I was growing up. I really liked the way that the thing that fascinated me most was the fact that a straight line became a curve.
Right, yes.
Because it's straight line after straight line after straight line, but when they're all put together, they form a curve, and I think they're very elegant, and what's more, it looks fantastic when it is a sculpture and it actually moves. And I like cable bridges as well, because I think they're very elegant pieces of engineering or a way to solve the idea of getting from, you know, point A to point B and making it an elegant and stable creation as well.
So just as well that you weren't obsessed with things like Rubik's Cubes, perhaps, when you were growing up, because that would have led to some very different
results. Yeah, well, you know, I would consider doing a Rubik's Cube pad. I'm also very interested in actually incorporating some kinetic memory, I guess, things that move or somehow computer-aided, as in, you know, things that will actually move. There's a designer called Hussein Shalayan, who is a very well-known English designer, and he incorporates engineering and structural stuff that is actually run by engines in his clothes.
Right.
And they're showpieces, obviously, and he does make sort of more normal clothes as well. But I wouldn't mind doing that with the hats too, incorporating something that actually moves of itself rather than having to be blown by the wind or something. Yeah.
Look, hopefully we will be able to talk again, or at least let people know about the demonstration.
Yeah, I'll let you know when the demonstration's on. You know, that as many people as possible, it would be great to have them there and talk about hats and answer questions too, because I love questions. They make me think, and, you know, as I love teaching too. So if I can see the light going in people's eyes about the art of millinery, then my job's done, I guess.
Yes, I'm sure there'll be many people who will have a lot of questions possibly after seeing, or comments certainly after seeing the exhibition.
Yeah.
Richard, thank you for introducing us to it this morning, and hopefully we will talk again soon.
All right. Okay. Yeah, that'd be wonderful.